This is Playful Little One. I will be attempting to do a hysterical literature reading for Gone Wild Audio. The book I have chosen to read, at least the introduction of, is The Lady of the Lake by Walter Scott. And we will see how far we get. Introduction. Walter Scott's literary activity began in 1796, when he was 25 years of age. His first great literary success was The Lay of the Last Minstrel. His second was Marmion. Some of his friends urged the writer of two famous poems to let well enough alone, but Scott replied, in the words of an old song, "He either fears his fate too much, or his deserts are small, who dares not put it to the touch to gain or lose it all." So Sir Walter put it to the touch. The Lady of the Lake was published at Edinburgh in 1810 by John Ballantyne and Company in an elegant quarto edition at 2 guineas, a trifle over $10 per copy. 20,000 copies were sold as fast as they could be supplied. The opinion of Geoffrey, editor of the Edinburgh Review, whose verdict was awaited by the authors with dread and whose judgments was considered almost final, was expressed as follows. "Upon the whole, we are inclined to think more highly of The Lady of the Lake than of other of its author's former publications. We are of opinion that it will be oftener read hereafter than either of them, and that, if it had appeared first in the series, their reception would have been less favorable than that which it had experienced. It is more polished in its diction, and more regular in its versification. The story is constructed with infinitely more skill and address. There is a greater proportion of pleasing and tender passages, with much less antiquarian detail, and upon the whole, a larger variety of characters, more artfully and judiciously contrasted. There is nothing so fine, perhaps, as the battle in Marmion, or so picturesque as some of the scattered sketches in the lay, but there is a richness and a spirit in the whole piece which does not pervade either of those poems. The Lady of the Lake is more popular, that is, it is read over and over again by more people than any other poem of considerable length in the English language. A few suggestions for the study of the poem may not be amiss. Keep the thread of the story well in mind. One incident follows another in such swift succession and with so frequent a change of scene that the student must be on his guard, or he will lose his way. In the 30th stanza of Canto 4, for instance, the speaker changes 11 times in 30 lines, sometimes twice in a single line. The student must be on the alert. Quotation marks are a hint, but the sense of the sentences is the student's safest clue to the identity of the speaker. The footing in stanzas 16 to 27 of the same canto is also precarious. Fitzjames, Ellen, Red Murdoch, and Blanche of Devon speak without any clumsy, said the knight, or continued the maid, or thus spoke the guide to show the way. At whatever cost, the student should go back and reread any passages which throw light on the passage in hand. A few cross-references are given in the notes. The student should make many more by annotating the margin of each page with the number of canto and line both backward and forward, so that he can trace a line of thought with the least loss of time. Each time that Norman, for instance, appears, the margin of text should be used to note previous passages bearing on him. Omitting all else, follow a single line of thought clear through the poem. With the thread of the story in mind, from the first reading, go through the poem reading only the passages, for instance, which throw light on Scott's conception of Roderick Dhu. Leaving everything else aside, follow this great chieftain from the time of his introduction or first mention to the gracious words spoken in the king's reception room at Stirling. In like manner, make a study of Ellen Fitzjames, the forays of Clan Alpine, the character of Douglas. Scott's treatment of dogs and horses, his descriptions of water, of cliffs and mountain peaks, of meadows, the suitability of each song to its piece, the mood of the introduction to each canto, whether fitting or not. First, get hold of the general story, then of the various lines of thought, or better, perhaps, the various characters and scenes. Oh, fuck. And then combine the parts into a whole. In this way, the poem will grow into the student's affections and become his own. Memorize the portions of the poem that please you best. Youth can memorize more readily than mature age. Every hour spent in committing well-chosen passages to memory is time and pleasure put at interest. The present writer will long remember the delight of riding out of Chicago one summer evening with a friend who recited stanza after stanza of The Lady of the Lake. Not alone, but with unabated zeal, until a late hour, only to take up the recital after breakfast again. The heat of the journey and the rattle of the train have passed from memory, but The Lady of the Lake still divides honors with mile after mile of flitting bayou, whereby the thousand, as Scott has it in the first canto, and that's as far as we're going to get. This was Playful Little One, boring you with the introduction to The Lady of the Lake. Oh, I hope you got something out of that, guys.